From the Sky News Centre at 5, former Treasury Minister Stephen Timms has been stabbed at a community centre in East London. The Labour MP was holding a constituency surgery in Beckton. His injuries are not thought to be life-threatening. A 21-year-old woman has been arrested. A mother has been jailed for at least 16 years for the murder of her toddler son. 21-month-old Bobby Louch was found with more than 80 injuries. He'd been punched and kicked to death by Colette Harris. Detective Inspector Paul Maddox read a statement on behalf of Bobby's tearful father, Dan.
Bobby was our little angel and had his whole life to look forward to, but was so cruelly denied for reasons we can't still fully comprehend.
The widow of a soldier who died trying to recover a fallen comrade has appealed to the new government to stop it happening again. 29-year-old Sergeant Paul McAleese was killed half an hour after 18-year-old Private Jonathan Young in Afghanistan. A coroner's recorded verdicts of unlawful killing. Sergeant McAleese's widow, Joanne, says the equipment available couldn't detect the device which killed her husband.
How can this be allowed to continue? I would like to call upon this new government to urgently review the equipment and the budget. Our soldiers fight every day in the difficult circumstances that we have heard about today. They deserve the very best.
David Cameron's called for a fresh start in the relationship between Westminster and Scotland. Meeting SNP leader Alex Salmond in Edinburgh, he vowed to govern with respect. Both sides in the BA cabin crew dispute are being invited to hold fresh talks to prevent a series of strikes due to start next Tuesday. The conciliation service ACAS says it's making the move because of the escalation of the dispute. And Glastonbury organiser Michael Eavis says he expects Coldplay to return as headliners to the festival next year. The band last topped the bill there 5 years ago. This year's headliners include Stevie Wonder and Muse. That's the latest. I'm Ben James.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Hello and welcome to BCFM's Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling, and our guest to review the local election and general election and some of this week's other news is Liberal Democrat Cabinet Member and Councillor for Ashley Ward, Dr John Rogers. Our old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is along too. After the 6 o'clock news, we're joined by local representatives from Greenpeace and from Friends of the Earth. How do they think the election result will affect our environment locally and nationally? We hear also an exclusive interview from the heart of the latest phase in Thailand's struggle for justice and democracy. I spoke this afternoon to an English teacher in Bangkok, whose school is now surrounded by barricades on the front line. The Sun newspaper this week released answer phone recordings of singer-songwriter Michael Jackson sounding disorientated. But is The Sun itself distorting Jackson's legacy? We hear a different recording of Michael from around the same time in front of an audience where he sounds entirely lucid as he exposes corruption and sleaze in the music industry. That's in the second hour. On to this week's news in a minute, but first here's our two-weekend weather forecast from MetCheck.com. This weekend, averaging 13 degrees Celsius, sunnier on Saturday, some rain on Sunday afternoon though. Averaging 16 degrees next week, in the daytime getting warmer as the week progresses, fairly dry with plenty of sunny spells. Next weekend, that's the 22nd and 23rd of May, averaging 16 Celsius, again pretty much the same as next week, dry but relatively cloudy with a few sunny spells, but no rain next weekend. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from MetCheck.com. Well, on to our look through the week's news in a minute, but first let's say hello to Liberal Democrat Cabinet Member for Transport and Councillor for Ashley Ward, John Rogers. Hi, John.
Good evening.
So you still have the transport portfolio, do you?
No. I lost the transport portfolio yesterday, and I'm now Executive Member for Care and Health.
And can you just explain how that process works?
The cabinet is elected. We're a very democratic party, and we elect our leader, deputy leader, on Saturday. And Barbara Jank and Simon Cook have taken those two. And we also elect six members of our cabinet. So the total cabinet is eight people. And we elected the other remaining six on Monday night. Then the leader, as is as per the constitution, then agrees who's going to do what within the cabinet, decides how to divide up the workload, how to, where are the priorities, where are the individual strengths, and so on. And basically we then meet up, discuss those. We discussed it yesterday morning, came to a firm conclusion, and announced them yesterday morning.
Okay, so is this something you wanted, to go from doing transport to health?
Not particularly. It's not. I really enjoyed doing transport.
So. But aren't you a medical doctor yourself?
I am a GP. So it's. I think there was a sort of feeling that we've got some big challenges coming up over the coming year, particularly in adult community care and the links that we have with the health service, and indeed things like Cycling City, which is about healthier living using cycling and walking. They all logically could tackle those with my experience.
So who was doing that job, health job, before you were?
Well, Councillor Bevnott from Bishopston was doing the job, which he was doing adult community care, and he was also doing neighbourhoods. And really, the neighbourhood agenda is really blossoming. We're trying to devolve as much power and responsibility and finance down to the lowest possible level. So he's going to devote himself pretty much full time to that work. That's going to be about the street scene, the bins, the highways, parking arrangements, all those sort of things which actually logically should be in the control of local people. Gary Hopkins is taking over my strategic transport role, and alongside the strategic waste role. Gary's, you know, world renowned for his skills on waste and so on, but he's now taking on the transport portfolio, which is about looking at how we get the transport arrangements, the buses, the trains across the city and indeed in the wider area, Bath, North East Somerset, Western Supermare and so on.
So can you tell us about what you've been doing over the last year for transport and how you expect that to sort of roll out over the next year or so?
Well, there's been things going on sort of nationally, really. We've been putting in a number of bids. Most importantly, things like the showcase bus route. We got £43 million to help support a set of radial bus routes, really quality bus routes going in and out of the city centre and also in and out of Bath. That was one aspect. Second was the rapid transit from Ashton Vale into the centre and round the centre and back out again, which we've now got programme entry for. We've got an ambitious plan to link Hartcliffe in the south with Emerson's Green and Bradley Stoke and so on in the north, which is the rapid transit route 2, rapid transit 3 rather, which is a £192 million project, which we've actually submitted details of that to the Department of Transport, and we're currently awaiting news on the funding for that.
Now, you make it sound all rather nice there, but as you know, there's been quite a lot of protests about withdrawal of one of the bus routes. I think, is it the number 52?
52 bus route. First Bus announced that they were going to withdraw the 52 bus with actually very little notice. They only have to give 8 weeks' notice, and that's what they gave, exactly 8 weeks. There was no warning beforehand. The service had been run commercially, literally we had no warning. In fact, a company called CityStar has taken on the route. A chap called Andy Fear and a small company based in Somerset has taken on the route. They're running an hourly service again along those routes. In fact, there was no interruption of service. They carried on straight away. And obviously we're hoping that will expand and continue.
Well, so at least it means that First Bus don't quite have a monopoly anymore.
First Bus haven't had a monopoly for a long time. Wessex Connect, U-Link. In fact, probably they've only got about 66-67% of the bus transport in our region.
Okay.
South Gloucestershire as well. There's services there, which they've got their own services.
Okay, so Martin Summers is here too, our somewhat crestfallen old Labour Oxford economist. Martin, who do you think should lead the Labour Party now?
I haven't got very strong opinions. I want to see what the field looks like before we...
But, I mean, who would you like to see step forward to take on? I mean, we've seen David Miliband so far. Are you a big fan of his?
I'm a bigger fan of his brother, actually, and it may well be that they will be competing against each other at the final.
It does start to sound a little bit like nepotism, like American politics, doesn't it, when you've got, you know, brother standing against brother. Not much of a competition.
No, because they've actually got different views. I mean, they're very close to each other in many ways, but they've actually got different views, and I would say that Ed is probably more to the radical wing of the party and David more to the establishment wing of the party. There's not a lot in it, but That's how it stacks up.
Why is it you think Harriet Harman decided she wasn't going to put her hat in the ring? Because many people were looking to her as the, you know, Gordon Brown's deputy.
You would have to ask her. I mean, I really don't know.
Would you like to have seen her stand?
I'm not really mad keen on any of them, I have to say. What I'm more interested in is the policies. I think what I really want to see is New Labour dead and buried. A lot of what they did in power was to continue conservative policies of the previous generation. They didn't, in fact, for example, do simple things like get a proper transport policy in place in 13 years. In New Zealand, for example, the Labour government, the radical Labour government, renationalised the railways. We never got round to that. I think as we move into the crisis, because the crisis isn't over, demands for more serious radical measures are going to come up, and I want to see the Labour Party articulating those radical measures, and that's what I'm looking for in the leadership.
Well, it's all very well you saying that you're interested in policies, but are there any figures in the Labour Party you think could step forward with those sorts of old Labour style policies?
John Cruddas, the MP for Dagenham, is shaping up as a sort of standard bearer of the left within the party, but I very much doubt whether he's got enough support across the party to be the leader. So the leader will be a compromise between the different perspectives within the party, and I think I accept that before we set off. I'm not looking for Julius Caesar, Napoleon, or anybody of that sort. We just need somebody who can play a straight bat, basically.
Well, John Cruddas, I've never heard... Well, I've heard the name, but I mean, aren't...
That is the problem with him. He's known to political anoraks, and we know who he is, but most people outside the party haven't got a clue who he is, and therefore that's probably going to count against him in terms of being the leader, so I can't see that he will be.
So you're really saying that you don't think there's anybody that was in the previous Labour cabinet that could do what you want them to do as a party activist?
Not really, but then I'm not in politics for people to be, or interested in politics for people to be heroes, if you like. I am really interested in the policies, and whoever the leader is, I want to see them pursuing policies which I can support. If they don't pursue policies which I can support, then obviously that's going to be a bit disappointing.
Okay, well, let's go and have a look at last week's stories, particularly the election now. And the first one we're going to start with is from Bristol247.com. The title of this story is "You Voted Williams But Got Yarker." This is a clear examination of some of the politics that went on in the Bristol West constituency, and this is where one of the Green Party's candidates in Bristol West, Ricky Knight, said that the Lib Dem voters in fact voted for Tory candidate Nick Yarker as a result of the deal between the Lib Dems and the Conservatives at Westminster. An angry Mr. Knight added that people's votes had been wasted more than ever before. Throughout the Bristol West campaign, he said, we were inundated with false claims from the Liberal Democrats about the Greens. We were sidelined and constantly reminded that only the Lib Dems could win, which they did, and how. We lost our deposits across the country, he's talking about the Green Party there, as hundreds of thousands voted tactically once again for the least bad option. Now, you voted Williams but got, in fact, Yarko. Is that true, John?
Not at all, no. I mean, basically, you voted Williams and they got Williams. Stephen Williams is a fantastic local MP. He's done a brilliant job over the last year, and his majority went up by over 10,000, actually. His national majority was about 1,000 on the new boundaries, and his majority went up to over 11,000. The main pledges, we were very clear about what our policies were, and we wanted fairer taxes, particularly to get rid of the unfair taxes on people who earn less than £10,000 a year, and that was a very popular measure on the doorstep. We wanted fairer services for young people, and we've got the pupil premium. We're trying to encourage big investment into schools, particularly for those less well off. We're looking for improved sustainable jobs and green economy, and actually dealing with the problems that the recession has caused and addressing those. And finally, and probably most importantly, is getting a fairer electoral system and a fairer political reform. And that's actually what we have got. We have got those things. And not only that, but those policies are now being implemented by the government of Great Britain. I mean, the idea that would happen Seems astonishing.
Well, one of the big things, of course, in the election was immigration, and the Liberal Democrats were saying that there was going to be an amnesty on illegal immigrants. Now, that's completely turned around, hasn't it? And so people who were voting for that have now got what is essentially this conservative cap on immigration, where it's really the opposite kind of policy. So you can understand why many voters may feel cheated by the deal that your party's done with the Conservatives.
I can well understand that. I mean, the thing is that people have got a coalition government, not a Conservative government, and there are clear, if you look through the sort of benefits of the coalition government that they've got, instead of having a minority Conservative government which would have introduced all the worst things that they were talking about, we've now got a government that is promoting a number of issues which people locally who voted for the Liberal Democrats, all those four I've just mentioned, which were our main priority platforms, are actually being delivered. The one that is in doubt, I suppose, is the fairer votes, and there is a discussion about whether we could get a better proportional voting system, and that's obviously absolutely fundamental to, that's actually why I'm a Liberal Democrat, is I want a fairer voting system so that we don't have a situation where the Green Party lose their majority, lose their deposits. We need to have a fair, you know, every vote should count. What we've got is an agreement with the Conservatives to introduce a referendum on AV, which isn't truly a proportional system, but it's better than what was being offered by Labour. And we've, you know, within the first day of the new government, we've got things like we've cancelled the third runway at Heathrow. We've suddenly announced the novel idea that children of asylum seekers shouldn't be incarcerated. You know, we're abolishing the DNA database. I'm just looking through these things. High-speed rail, abolishing ID cards. These are all things that the Labour Party has introduced over the last 13 years. They've rolled back civil liberties. They've taken away all sorts of powers. And it is just totally ironic that we've got a Conservative government working with a Liberal Democrat government to put back, return proper, fair systems. It's ridiculous, but that is the way it is.
It did look like the Liberal Democrats were bounced into this deal last week, though, because Gordon Brown left, went to see the Queen, and David Cameron also went to see the Queen before the evening where the deal had actually been done between the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats. Don't you think that there was an element of trying to bounce the Liberal Democrat MPs into signing this deal? Because it would be very difficult for them once Cameron is Prime Minister, and supposedly Clegg has done the deal with him, to then say, oh, actually, we don't like this deal.
We did trust our leaders to negotiate a good deal, and I think all the Liberal Democrats I've talked to agree that we've actually got a fantastic deal. We've got a really good progressive manifesto through. We've got all sorts of things that just weren't possible before. The safeguards on the misuse of anti-terrorism legislation, review of libel laws to protect freedom of speech, restoration of rights to non-violent protest. These are things which the Conservative Party has signed up to in that joint coalition agreement. And, you know, you can say what you like, oh, you know, we shouldn't have done a deal with the Conservatives. I, you know, on a personal level, if you'd asked me a week ago if I'd seen this as being, am I more likely to support a deal with the Conservative Party or with the Labour Party, I would have said the Labour Party. I mean, many of our aims and ideals seem to be the same. But when the discussions went, and there were discussions going on between Labour and the Liberal Democrats, but they just weren't prepared to countenance anything. They were more interested in their leadership election than they were about the welfare of the and the future of this country.
Well, there was also the fact that the numbers didn't stack up for a Labour-Liberal alliance in the same way as they do with the Conservatives.
Quite. They don't stack up as well, and that's true, and that would have been a factor in it. But you have to think about whether people like the Scottish Nationalists or Plaid Cymru would have actually sided with the Conservatives to bring down a progressive Labour-Liberal Democrat alliance. I don't know. You know, there are things. And you also got to think about the Liberal Democrats stand for proportional representation. We want to have a fairer voting system so that every vote is represented in Parliament. Every country that has that system ends up almost always with coalition governments. That it's the norm if you go to Germany or France or other parts of Europe. So it's always all that's happening is that we're now for the first time in 70 years, the first time since the war, we've got a coalition government which is about sharing power, sharing responsibility and doing the best thing for the people of Britain.
Well, David Cameron's talked about having, either a commission or a committee to look into this, holding this referendum. Why can't he just announce, well, we're going to hold it in 3 or 4 weeks' time or 2 months' time? Why have a... Because it seems to me this may be a way of kicking this whole thing into touch.
I think one of the things that we've got a 5-year term, a fixed term parliament, which actually was a part of the Labour manifesto as well, to have fixed term parliaments. It wasn't part of the Conservative manifesto, and that's been included in the combined manifesto. We've got 5 years in which to deliver a proper, fairer voting system for 2015, and that's obviously, that will be a key aim. The Conservatives have been clear, they don't favour a proportional system. So part of the reason for actually having a careful look at it and sharing it with the people of this country is to get people talking about it. Do you actually want to have a situation where it's Labour, Conservative, Labour, Conservative, Labour, Conservative? Or would you like a situation whereby people have to make deals with others, have to work together, have to cooperate? And we've got lots of experience of cooperating on councils around the country, and there was a Labour Conservative coalition for about best part of 18 months on Bristol City Council, which managed after a fashion. We've got currently got a Liberal Democrats council with a majority, even though only 34% of the voters voted for us. 66% of Bristol voted for some other party. So, you know, we've got an overall majority, and yet we haven't got those votes.
So this change in the voting system, you may actually suffer your party as
a
result.
Indeed, and I would welcome that.
Okay, the other thing, of course, is you mentioned this idea of a fixed-term parliament of 5 years, but the Financial Times tomorrow is actually, I think, even leading on the story that this is an attempt at gerrymandering, because they're also saying at the same time that only a 55% number of MPs should be necessary to trigger a general election, a confidence vote. Yeah. Don't you think it's a bit arrogant to say 5 years? Because we may find even in just a few months that this government coalition between yourselves and the Conservatives falls apart, and it may be really a good idea to have another election.
Well, my understanding is that there is a difference between a vote of confidence, which is just a straight majority of 50%, and a call to have a general election, which in fact in Scotland requires a 66% majority. I think it's a two-thirds majority is required there. And the reason is that if you're going to have fixed term parliaments, there's no point in having anything if you have a situation where the largest party is just able to pull the plug at any stage. The real fear that I had about going into a coalition with the Conservatives is that they would sort of use their power over the next 6 months and then call a snap general election, and we would be in a really difficult position. You can have a vote of no confidence in the government, and then it is then bound that everybody has to... We could then potentially have a Labour-Liberal-Democrat coalition, a Labour-Conservative coalition could then take over, but it wouldn't require a new general election. And that's the difference. So it's the difference between vote of confidence and the government changing and a vote of and actually a dissolution of Parliament. And that's my understanding of the difference between the two. So I think there is, to call a new general election, if you're going to have fixed-term parliaments, it has to be harder than just a simple vote of confidence.
OK, just to bring Martin Summers in here. Martin, your party's blown it here. You could have cut a deal with the Lib Dems, but you failed.
Well, I'm afraid that's right. I mean, I'm certainly in favour of such a deal, and so are many others. But if you've got people like Blunkett and Reid and Diane Abbott wading in while the negotiations are still going on, saying that it's not acceptable to them, if I was a Liberal Democrat negotiator at that stage, I'll say, well, what John was mentioning earlier with problems with the SNP, problems with Plaid Cymru, problems with the Greens, problems with the SDLP in Northern Ireland, I don't see any problems with those people. They would have been quite happy to have a coalition. This has been sabotaged by what I would call the Neanderthal tendency within the Labour Party, and I very much regret that. Very much so.
Well, who are the Neanderthal? What do you mean? What do you mean by Neanderthal?
I can understand why the Liberal negotiators say, well, if you can't carry these people, this is not going to be stable. And I'm afraid that they don't represent the majority of Labour opinion, but they represent a substantial slice of it. And those people are still to be persuaded. of the necessity of changing the voting system, for example. Just to pick up on one point that John made, I mean, the Labour Party did offer a referendum on AV, which is presumably why you were able to extract the concession from the Conservatives. What I would have done is, at the beginning of the election campaign, I said we're going to offer a referendum on STV, single transferable vote. Mm. I mean, what happened in Bristol West, for example, I'm a member of Bristol West Labour Party, I don't see how we're ever going to get back in this game without STV. AV won't be good enough for us, because all the Yarkers votes would then go to Steve. Even if we were to peel Steve's left-wing votes off, which we might be able to do. But we still lose under AV, so we want STV.
We've got three different voting systems we talked about, other than the present one so far. Can either or both of you explain AV? How does that work, the alternative vote system?
Shall I do that and you do STV?
Martin, okay. Martin. Okay.
AV, basically, you'd have a constituency the same as Bristol West, but you'd put people in order of preference. So people might vote Nick Yarker first because they're Conservative, Liberal second, and then possibly wouldn't bother to vote the third vote because you don't have to use them all because they don't want to vote Labour. Yeah. So Labour voters might vote Labour first and Liberal second to keep the Conservatives out. But the fact is that it's the votes are redistributed until you get one person winning. Under STV, each vote actually counts and elects somebody. Under AV, your second or third preference vote might count, but your first preference vote may not. That's how I understand it, anyway.
And what about the single transferable vote you're talking about there?
No, that's alternative
vote. Okay, John, do you understand? STV, do you understand the single transferable vote?
I think it's. I mean, it is probably quite complicated to explain.
Martin, do you want to have a go then?
Yeah, I think one people's single transferable vote is where your first preference goes to your second preference, and then your second preference goes to your third preference if the first one isn't elected. But what you often have is in Ireland they have multi-member constituencies. So what you'd have is one big constituency for Bristol, and you would then list your preferences 1, 2, 3. And what usually happens in Ireland is you get a mixture of people elected, one Fianna Gael, one Fianna Fáil, one other, say Green or Labour. It means that every vote counts in STV. Every vote counts and everybody elects somebody. My father, for example, voted Liberal in this election as a Liberal councillor in Herefordshire. He didn't win because the Conservatives won, as they always do. He said he's 75 now and he's never voted in an election in his whole life where his vote has actually counted. And that's not right. It can't be right.
First vote, my vote counted, was for Stephen Williams in 2005. That's the first time I'd ever voted for a winning candidate.
Well, it seems that the system really ought to change one way or another, and let's just hope that that's helped clarify a little bit. I mean, the idea of STV and AV, are they both types of proportional representation or not?
AV isn't really proportional representation. Okay. It's a kind of modified version of first past the post.
Okay.
But it does. The thing about AV is it does require whoever wins to have over 50% of the vote.
Yeah.
So for the first time ever, you get people who've got the majority of people who've at least put the name of Stephen Williams or Nick Yarker or Paul Smith on their ballot paper as one of their choices. So that is the advantage there.
So can you guarantee people that voted Liberal in Bristol over the last week or so that by whatever 5 years by the next election we will have an alternative vote system or a proportional system, and we have moved away from the first past the post?
The agreements on the table from both, I mean, in fact, our manifesto also was that we would actually have a referendum on it. So it's actually not down to me whether we actually have an alternative voting system. It's down to the people of Britain, whether they want to have a change in voting system.
Can I just mention what Linton Crosby said, who's a Conservative spin doctor from Australia, and he's advising the Conservatives, and he's on the record as saying, yes, you can promise the Liberals a referendum on AV. What you do is you make sure that the question is extremely complicated and controversial, so you make it difficult to get a yes vote, and in any case, we've made no commitment to abide by the result of that referendum. I'm just putting that in your direction for someone to think about.
Okay, well, in a moment we'll talk about, I think we've done to death the idea of how the electoral process actually works.
It's very important, because if we'd had an AV election, the Liberals' votes would have translated into a lot more seats, and a Liberal-Labour coalition would definitely be how this country was being run. What's happened here is the electoral system, because it's rigged, has given the Conservatives a buy-in to the final. That's the problem with the electoral system. It was designed years ago to engineer exactly that sort of outcome. Yeah? They get extra oomph because it all flows in their favour. And of course it works sometimes for the Labour Party, but you get a Labour Party that's competing just for those middle votes in the middle ground around the marginal seats around London. So the whole of politics gets skewed by this, and it's not trivial. It means we're possibly marching in the wrong direction completely from where people really want to go.
Well, the sad thing is that Tony Blair promised electoral reform part of the 1997 election. But of course, when he got a huge landslide victory on whatever it was, 38% of the vote, of course, then you know the MPs were really reluctant to then push forward with that because it would mean so many of them would not get elected again. So it's a very tricky one.
It's a big failure on our part. I put my hand up and say that is, we've had 13 years in power and we ought to have reformed the electoral system. And that would have created a possibility for keeping, you know, essentially the Thatcherite right out of politics in Britain indefinitely. And instead of playing to win, we've faffed around and now we've got the consequences. So in a sense, I don't blame the Liberals for doing what they've done, but you do understand that we're going to oppose you because that's what we've got to do.
Fair enough.
Okay, so that's done a lot of looking at the different sorts of systems that may come in the future if there is a referendum indeed over the voting system. But of course, these don't really mean a thing unless if the process of the election itself isn't working properly. And of course, we have many problems this election, in particularly here in Bristol, in the local elections and in the general election, with actually disruption and blunders that led to all sorts of questions now being asked about the conduct of the elections. Things like the wrong voting slips being sent, votes going missing, votes turning up late and mysteriously disappearing. And we're talking about that in a minute. But first of all, let's have a listen to Marina Morris's Vox Pop this week, because she's been out on the streets asking you what you think about whether the Liberal Democrats should have gone with the Labour Party or should have gone with the Conservatives.
I think the Conservatives should form a majority government, and I think the Liberal Democrats should arrange to not vote them down on matters of confidence. So I think they should work together to get the economy going, but I think they should really enter no formal arrangement.
I think the alternative is that he props up a failed government, and that would cause us to have another election in, say, 6 months' time. But I think by that time, people would think that the Liberal Party had either bottled it by not supporting the country and doing what needs to be done now, or they'd supported a failed government, in which case I would think that in 6 months' time, no one's going to vote Liberal. So he's in a bit of a no-win situation, but I think the thing they've got to do is to think of what's best for the country and put party politics to one side and get on and do what's necessary. And I think that is to sort out the economy, to sort out this enormous deficit that Labour has presented us with, and sort out the other issues, the proportional representation and other issues afterwards. But they've just got to sit down and sort out this economy now. Otherwise, we're going to be in the position that Greece finds itself in, possibly Spain and Portugal.
Fundamentally, I think more people voted for the Conservatives, and therefore they are the party of choice to that extent, and therefore it would seem probably more democratic to form a coalition with the Conservatives and reflect what people want.
I would rather they didn't, personally, basically because I don't like the Conservatives, I don't like their policies, I don't like anything about them. I'd much prefer them to make an alliance with Labour.
I think that's the most likely outcome, I think, and if we want a stable government, it needs to happen pretty soon, so I thought, yeah.
No, I think the Conservatives ought to not cooperate with them, and we ought to have another election.
Yes, and hardly any people have voted for him, so I can't understand why he should have any power or say or authority whatsoever.
Should Nick Clegg form an alliance with the Labour Party?
I don't think he should, because the Labour Party have had 12 years to prove what they can achieve, which, to be honest, is very little. It's a government which inherited a fantastic economy, and look where we are now. I think that Nick Clegg really needs to grasp the nettle and sit down with David Cameron and form a government which is going to be in place for the next 4 or 5 years. We can't afford to have party politics taking up valuable government time over the next 6 months while all this horse trading goes on. And really, the only sensible alliance, the only alliance that will work long-term, is Conservative and Liberal.
I don't think so, because it hasn't got the weight of popular opinion, and I think also then it would result in stalemate. even if they've got a coalition, I don't really understand it, but I don't think they've got enough to do what they want to do.
Yes, definitely. Because I prefer the policies of Labour, quite frankly, I do like their leader, and I think they should keep him. And I just think we'd all be better off that way. And I think both parties are very sensible, and I think they could work together.
I think it's less likely to occur. And I think if they're going to do that, it's going to take longer, so I would say no.
Would you like to see a system of proportional representation in future elections?
To be honest, I'm not sure what proportional representation is all about. I think someone needs to sit down and explain to the populace exactly what it is and how it works, because until they do that, it's something that doesn't really have any meaning to the average person in the street. I haven't read anything over the last 4 or 5 weeks that tells me anything about how it works, how it will work in the future, and how it will better represent me and where I live in Westminster.
Personally, I prefer the system as it is now. I'd be worried that proportional representation would give undue weight to minority parties like the BNP. That would be my major concern.
I don't really understand enough about it, but no, because I think it always ends up in a compromise.
I don't know what great it is, but yeah, it seems fair, but I think that would probably lead to further debates and a lot more discussions again. I think the system we've got works, mostly, except this time.
Except this time, although it should work this time, because the Conservatives have got an extra 2 million votes, and that should count. That's more, so they've easily won. So I can't understand why the system can't be tweaked so that in such a similar circumstances they would be able to form a government.
Who should govern the country?
I think David Cameron has the mandate. I don't think anyone else has. The polls obviously rejected Gordon Brown and rejected the concept of having a Prime Minister that isn't elected. Gordon Brown wasn't. And I think it's a bit devious of the Labour Party to now be talking about any alliance with Nick Clegg, where the Labour Party will oust Gordon Brown and bring in someone else. So for another term of office, we're going to have a potential leader who is not elected. I think it's absolutely disgraceful and deceitful.
It should be David Cameron, I think.
Gordon Brown, definitely.
I'd like to see a Labour government in the country. That's obviously that option, I think, is now gone. So I think it will be, Cameron, I think. It will be Prime Minister.
David Cameron.
I agree.
Just to make it clear, we did record that Vox Pop before the resignation of Gordon Brown and before David Cameron was made Prime Minister by the Queen. Now, both of you, what do you think about what you've just heard? Because it seems a pretty much a split there, really, halfway between some people saying that the Lib Dems have done the right thing and others saying they've done the wrong thing. Are you 100% certain there, John, that you've done the right thing by going with David Cameron, that it really is going to be a stable government now for the next 5 years?
I couldn't say I'm absolutely 100%. No, I think it's going to be proof of the pudding is in the eating. We're going to have to see how it pans out. And there is a real, it is a risk, as people were saying there, that, you know, we'll be sort of seen as being just part of the Conservatives. My own view is that it's definitely not a Conservative government. We have a coalition government, and the proof of that coalition government is going to be on whether we manage to deliver the joint agreement, the joint manifesto, which takes certainly some of the best policies from the Liberal Democrats and tempers some of the worst policies from the Conservatives. But we'll have to see. I think it is it's uncharted territory for this country. I think it sounds exciting. I think that all the parties were talking about we want change, and we've certainly got change.
Well, what about, because David Cameron before the election was saying there's no way there should be a hung parliament, you know, he was sort of banging his fist on the table, and now there has been, and he's got into this relationship with the Lib Dems, and certainly looking at the first press conference, the joint press conference, with Nick Clegg sort of staring at David Cameron in this kind of admiring fashion, it starts to look as if David Cameron is the sort of prefect at Eton, and Nick Clegg is just his fag.
I disagree. I think that there does seem to be a relationship between the two, and I have to. I mean, it is astonishing what changes both of them have agreed to and taken back and sold unanimously to both of their parties. I mean, it is something. I mean, I heard David Cameron talk about the fact that what they've concentrated on is where they agree. Where they agree, they wanted to get rid of ID cards, they both agreed to that. They wanted to cancel the third runway, they both agreed to that. They had a number of things. They wanted a fairer electoral system and a fairer political system. And those are the things that they agree. There are a few things that they disagree on. They disagreed on the
Trident,
for example, and they disagree on nuclear power. And there are clear understanding of how they'll handle that. Now, whether in fact, without the support of the Liberal Democrats, the Conservatives won't have an overall majority on those issues. So it will be possible for a progressive groups in the council in Parliament to outvote those things. So I think it's a really mature document. It's 9 pages. I printed it off and you know, read it through, and it is a very mature document coming from a number of people who are putting the interests of the country before the interests of their own political parties. And actually, that's what people want, I think. I think people will come to understand that it is important, rather than just having Yabu politics, which we've had, well, ever since I can remember. It is much better to have a mature discussion about the issues. What is the best thing to do about immigration? What is the best thing to do about Europe? And have those debates, not sort of party political, partisan discussions where you just have people shouting at one another.
Wouldn't the best way to do that to have a minority Conservative government, have no formal relationship between the two parties, so that Liberal MPs were free to vote whichever way they wanted on their conscience and not straitjacketed by this deal that they've struck?
That obviously was the other option to do. The difficulty is that what almost certainly would have happened, and what's happened in the past, as it happened in 1974, which was actually my first election in Bristol, was I can remember actually going out at 4 o'clock in the morning delivering good morning leaflets around the city to places that I now know are very familiar to me. But that in 1974 there was an election, no overall control. There was a pact formed, and then in October there was a second election when the government just had a big crushing majority. So if, you know, it's likely at least that one of the possibilities would be that if we did have another election in October, the Conservatives would say, we can't govern the country like this, and basically they would then win the seats that they failed to win last time. And maybe we go back to the Labour it's your turn, Conservative it's your turn, Labour it's your turn type of parliaments that we've had since for 65 years.
But the Liberal Democrats on the City Council have come out absolutely adamantly against the new nuclear build, when we're looking at the potentially two new nuclear power stations being built along the Bristol Channel. What sort of guarantees are there? And how's that all going to pan out? Are we going to get these nuclear power stations now you've done this deal with David Cameron or not?
I don't know. Short answer is I don't know. I mean, we objected it. We've objected to the expansion of the third runway at Heathrow. We objected to the expansion at Bristol Airport. There are things which, if we're trying to conserve our environment and to protect the future of our and make a really sustainable city, you know, then we have to make some difficult decisions. And that's not about just developing more and more nuclear power stations and more airways, airplanes and runways. One of the first things they've introduced, which was a Liberal Democrat policy, was to put tax on aeroplanes rather than on passengers. So if you've got if you've got an aeroplane that's flying around half empty, that costs the company an awful lot more than if it's flying around full. So, you know, there's lots of really innovative stuff going in, and it's actually being implemented.
Martin, okay, finally, let's just ask you if you can just explain. You talked earlier on about these Neanderthals in the Labour Party. Who are these Neanderthals, and how? Why do you describe them like that?
Well,
scuppered the deal,
they scuppered the deal, but worse than that, they were actually going on air and saying that the deal wasn't a runner while our negotiators were still negotiating. I mean, that's just unacceptable.
Sounds like very slack discipline in your party.
Well, the problem is that we've got. My views are clear, and as are the views of many on the left of the party. I'm part of the Compass Group. We had Evan Harris come to speak to our conference after the last local election. We had Caroline Lucas on the platform. I mean, when they asked. There was about 800 Labour activists in the room in University of Institute of Education in London. Said, how many people here want to change the electoral system? It was virtually unanimous. And these are the younger activists. Because they can see what's happened with New Labour is that, yes, we get a Labour government, but the policies are set in stone by the kind of game they have to play, which is to beat the Conservatives at their own game in the marginal seats in the South. Now, the thing about changing the electoral system is that we can get back into the inner cities and actually start to represent those people that we've forgotten about. And that's why I'm in favour of it.
Isn't there another problem in that your party, I don't know about the other parties, but certainly your party doesn't appear to be very democratic? If your party activists want one thing, but your leadership is taking the party in a completely different policy direction.
I think that the Liberal Party are going to face similar problems. My father's a Liberal activist, my mother is, my sister voted Liberal. None of them are happy with this deal, and many of them are saying they'll never vote Liberal again. That's my family, my Liberal family.
So what's your guess as a Labour activist as to how long this deal will last between the Conservative and Lib Dems?
I think one of the things we haven't been talking about, the elephant in the room, is the economic policy that will be pursued. Unlike my leadership, I don't believe in any public spending cuts. This is not what you do at this stage of the economic cycle. We're not going to solve the problem by not having spending cuts. There's an awful lot of other things we need to do, reform the banks, raise taxes on wealth, etc. But cutting public expenditure at this moment, I left it outside. I brought with me an article about, it was a city analyst last week said a Conservative victory will lead to a 20% fall in property prices because cutting public expenditure will knock the bottom out of the economy.
Well, that's great for first-time buyers, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily if they've lost their jobs. What will happen in the next few months is Vince Cable is going to have to face down George Osborne, or George Osborne is going to squash Vince Cable. And if the economy goes on the skids, and we're not out of the recession yet, the depression... If the Liberal Party is seen to be countenancing spending cuts at the heart of a depression recession, they'll have betrayed Beveridge, they'll have betrayed Keynes, they'll actually wrecked the economy. I don't believe that cutting public expenditure is the right thing to do. The Conservatives are simply wrong about that, and the consequences will be swift. And I suspect that a lot of Liberals, perhaps John here, will not be happy with that either.
So, John, I mean... Vince Cable and George Osborne, as Martin says, they're like chalk and cheese, aren't they?
Oh, there are differences. I mean, it's what's quite interesting is to see what they've actually said about the deficit reduction. And they've said that there will need to be significantly accelerated reduction in the structural deficit over the course of the Parliament. So that's agreed. And I think that's actually, the Labour agree with that.
The leadership do.
All right. Arrangements that will protect those on low incomes from the effect of public sector pay constraint and other spending constraints. So we need to have protection in place. And we also need protection of jobs by stopping Labour's proposed jobs tax, the national insurance surcharge. So there are things which are happening. We're looking at... And the big difference was that Conservatives were talking about £6 billion public service cuts over the coming year, whereas Liberal Democrats and Labour did not want to start until next year on the basis that we don't want what's called a double dip recession, that we sort of start to come out of it and then back down into it. And what we've got in there is a concession which says that we will only proceed with those cuts subject to advice from the Treasury and the Bank of England on their feasibility and advisability. So both, you know, there is a get-out clause there, which I'm sure that my colleagues in Parliament will be looking at most closely.
Okay, so now let's go, as promised, to have a little look at some of the problems with the elections here in Bristol and other parts of the country. There were all sorts of protests and things going on in Sheffield, London, Liverpool, Manchester, when people weren't actually able to vote. But thankfully, it looks like everybody in here in Bristol was able to vote, despite some quite long queues and some people waiting up to 2 hours to vote. But some of those votes then subsequently got lost and were found again. This article was in the Evening Post last weekend. Red-faced council officials in Bristol have ordered an inquiry into a series of blunders over ballot papers which reduced the city's local elections to a farce. Results of the elections in 23 of the city's 70 wards were held up last Friday because of the mix-ups. The first result was not declared until nearly 2 p.m, 4 hours later than expected, and counting was not completed until nearly 4 p.m. The problems began when it was discovered that some of the ballot papers involving Bishopston Ward were mixed up with those of Bishopsworth. There was also a problem in Brislington East and West wards, where some of the ballot papers were found in the wrong bundles because one polling station, a primary school, was used as the count venue for both wards. And we were also told on this programme last week by John Keighley that the accounts and were actually announced as Bristol East or Bristol West rather than Brislington by whoever was the returning officer in those counts. In Hengrove, 50 ballot papers initially disappeared and then were found again. But the biggest farce was in Avonmouth, where Tory candidate Spud Murphy initially won by 10 votes, only for a bundle of 32 ballot papers to be subsequently found. When they were counted, there was a dead heat with Labour's Doug Naismith, who finally won after a series of recounts, then eventually drawing a name out of a hat. The blunders began 2 weeks ago when more than 2,000 voters in the city were at the centre of a foul-up over postal voting for the general election, which was sent to the wrong, where papers were sent to the wrong address. Tory councillor Peter Abrahams said that the blunders dented people's confidence in the electoral system. He also said, "We have had a series of problems, which means the whole system really needs an overhaul. I can't believe it's rocket science," he said, "to put a few ballot papers in a box and get them counted properly. I'm just worried that we will find ourselves in a situation where the results might be doubted. We need to have confidence in the returning officer so that we know the results will be accurate." Stephen McNamara, who's the council's top legal expert and is in charge of the counts and a returning officer, apologised to candidates and their supporters in the council house who were waiting for the results. Instead of the results being declared as the counts for each seat finished, they were announced together after all the counting had finished. Mr McNamara said that the council had to do this to ensure no discrepancies emerged after some results had been declared. He said it's essential that the results are exactly correct and we must make sure that every ballot paper has been properly counted. Bristol City Council's Chief Executive Jan Ormeroyd promised an internal inquiry to find out what went wrong and resolve the issues to prevent them happening again. She also pledged to ask the Electoral Commission in London to hold its own inquiry into the blunders. Mrs. Ormeroyd said, "I too am concerned about making sure that the democratic process is properly conducted. It's an incredibly important principle which must be upheld." And the council's leader, Barbara Jenks, said she supported the chief executive decision to call in the Electoral Commission to hold an independent review. She said, "We can't defend what's happened. It's completely unacceptable." Labour's leader, Helen Holland, said it's really important that people looking at the electoral process have confidence in the system, and said the responsibility ultimately lay with the Liberal Democrat administration to make sure the elections were run properly. Conservative leader Jeff Gollop said, "I'm aghast that the elections have been run as though we were an ill-informed democracy." Well, that's putting it fairly politely. It's almost like a kind of the sort of thing that you might expect from a banana republic, John. You are actually responsible for this as a cabinet member. So how come the election in Bristol is such a farce? One of the things that we're always hearing is that we want to encourage more voters to actually go to the polls and increase it. How on earth can we ask people to go to the polls when there's so many mix-ups like we've seen in the elections last week?
Well, I mean, I can only apologise. It just seemed that it was didn't work well. There were a number of problems with it. As far as we can see, the all the ballot papers which were apparently missing turned up, but obviously some of them turned up in the wrong box. It looks like when the postal votes came in, the Bishopsworth ones went into Bishopston and so on. It just suggests that there was a lack of checking, lack of rigour with the whole process by which things were handled. And as has been said by Jan Ormeroyd, there is going to be an independent inquiry into that and what went wrong. There were also issues with the people in the new Bristol West were sent ballot papers in the postal votes for that were actually referred to Bristol East candidates. Now, we've spent 4 years trying to explain to people in Eastern and Lawrence Hill that actually they will be part of Bristol West at the next election, and lo and behold, the postal voters there got voting papers which had Kerry McCarthy and so on in there. So it is something which is very poor. There is going to be a very detailed investigation, both internal and an external investigation, and we will report fully when we know the results of that.
So is the returning officer, Stephen McNamara, is he been suspended or is he still drawing his pay? Has he got his job still?
The review has not happened. So once that review has happened, then action will be taken with any employees if that's appropriate.
But I mean, ultimately, the buck stops with him, doesn't it?
Well, it depends what went wrong. I mean, there are actually running an election is actually a surprisingly complicated process, particularly when you have ballot papers involved, which have to be printed by external printers. There's software that has to work with, link in with the electoral register in Bristol, and then the sort of national printing of that. There's sort of security issues around that. I'm not clear where things went wrong. There was obviously a series of things that went wrong, and who is responsible for any errors that occurred, and what steps will be taken as a result of that will obviously come out of the inquiries.
Martin, what are your thoughts about this really unprecedented amount of different mistakes made during the process of this election?
Well, as we said last week with John Keeley and Chris Windows, I mean, it doesn't seem to have materially affected the result, and that's what we must be clear. I mean, there's been lots of mistakes, lots of mess-ups, but it's not been a political mistake or a political stitch-up. It's just a mess. And as we said last week, perhaps what we need to think about doing is changing the day we vote.
Come on, you can't suggest that because it was on a Thursday that was a problem.
No, it does. We need to change the way we approach our whole... I mean, if there's going to be...
This is a management issue, isn't it?
It is a management issue, I agree, and there's things got to be done about this in this particular case. But I think we need to take the pressure off. I mean, for example, when we were discussing this last week, we were talking about what happened in other parts of the country where people weren't allowed to vote because they arrived too late. The polling stations were closed. I mean, I used to live in Poland. I used to work over there. I used to cooperate with the Polish Socialist Party when I lived over there. But their elections happen on a Sunday, and that means that everybody has got all day to go and vote. And people are rushing. Why are you getting a rush at the last minute? It's because people have got to work, they've got to put their kids to bed, they've got to have their tea, and by the time they get down to vote, it's getting late. I think we've got to look at all of these things if we're going to change the electoral system, as we promised to do. I mean, that's the only promise that I really want to see the coalition deliver. Because if we can change the game, we can start playing at a faster level, we can start discussing things in a more serious way. We're held back in this country by archaic rules and regulations, like why we vote on Thursdays. We're the only people who do that. It's silly, really, because it just doesn't give people time to actually...
But you're not actually answering my question at all, are you, about the actual conduct of the nuts and bolts of how the election works?
I'm not a councillor, so I can be more forthright possibly than John can, but I would still say this. Nobody should jump to judgment about something as serious as this. Kerry McCarthy, for example, bringing up another issue, she did a very silly thing by tweeting the postal votes that she'd seen. Now, that's a very silly thing for her to do. It's a criminal offence. It could lead to 6 months in prison, £5,000 fine, and God knows it could lead to her being disqualified as an MP.
Yeah, but it's not going to affect whether people vote or not. This is the problem. This is what I'm trying to get at.
The process is being investigated by the Electoral Commission, and it would be entirely inappropriate for us to sit here and second-guess that investigation. When that investigation has carried out its work and found out what went wrong, then we'll know where to point the finger of blame. I don't think we should be doing that, and especially when it's so important, when we're talking, you know, very, very important issues here. There's due process involved here. Let due process take its course. It's totally unacceptable. All the politicians we've had on this show in the last 2 weeks have said exactly the same thing. It's totally unacceptable. Nobody likes it. Nobody's happy with it. It's got to be sorted out. But let's not make it a party political matter. Let's make it a matter for proper due process. And if somebody's to blame, then let's let that blame fall. But let's not prejudge it. Let's make sure we got a proper investigation.
Okay. Now, we've probably only got time for the one news story this week, because the elections are such a big issue, and we're going to have a look at the carnage in Iraq. This Monday, we've seen casualties from the deadly attacks across Iraq running to 114 deaths and hundreds wounded, medical sources said, in one day in Iraq. The Interior Ministry reports said the attacks during the day killed a total of at least 91 people and possibly up to 114, and wounded more than 300 others. What are your thoughts, John, first, about the legacy that we've left after our occupation and invasion of Iraq?
Well, as you know, the Liberal Democrats were against the war in Iraq. We don't feel it was a legal war, and it's very sad that the problems there are remaining and indeed sometimes escalating. We have to be very careful before we start taking military action abroad, and hopefully the new coalition will have those thoughts uppermost. It is very difficult externally to... my own feeling is that a lot of these things are due to the fact that people don't have a feeling, a strong feeling of being involved in their country and the way the country's run. They feel it, the impositions and so on. That doesn't excuse this outrageous behaviour of bombing and killing innocent people, but it is, in countries where people do feel involved, this happens less often, and I think there is a link between fair, open elections and the way that people feel involved, directly involved, and those countries where there are dictatorships and it is people do not feel directly involved.
Martin, it was your Labour Party that sort of led the charge from Britain into Iraq, and actually it looks like the situation over there now is far worse than it was under Saddam Hussein.
Yes, but you know very well that my wing of the Labour Party were as opposed to this as the Liberals were, and we marched together against it. I don't. It's very hard to comment about some terrible events like this, because who's doing what to who, it's very hard to guess. That's why ordinary people think three times before they get involved in other people's wars, because they know very well understanding what the hell's going on is fantastically complicated. One of the things that doesn't come out when we hear about these bomb attacks is there's massive amounts of death squad activity run by the Iraqi government from the Interior Ministry. So if you're a Sunni Arab and you're being assassinated and death squad by the Shia government, your response is then to go and blow up Sunnis. But coming back to foreign wars, William Hague says that Iran is the top of his agenda and he's going to do something about Iran's nuclear programme. If we're not careful, we could end up with another war.
Okay, thanks to this week's guests, Liberal Democrat Councillor for Ashley Ward and Cabinet Member John Rogers. We're back after the news.
It is run by volunteers and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.